pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Good morning. Welcome to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Good Thursday morning to you. We do appreciate you listening as always. Coming up on today's program, Congressman Barry Moore from the 2nd Congressional District. We'll kick it off with him in about a half hour. Busy time. House Freedom Caucus. What does the future hold in store for Kevin McCarthy? A bunch of different things to talk about. That's coming up in about a half hour. Also on today's program, we'll hear from a friend of the show, State Representative Mark Shirey, is going to join us. So you want to stay tuned for that. That's in the 10 o'clock hour. And finally, a blast from the past. We haven't heard from him in a while, but our good friend Robert Adderholt. Congressman Adderholt from the North Alabama 4th Congressional District, but also a member of the House Appropriations Committee. So a lot to hear about there. He's coming up in the 11 o'clock hour, so please stay tuned for that. Ascension Technologies text line 251-343-0106. You want to get in touch with the program? Be sure to reach out via the Ascension Technologies text line, compliment, complaint, suggestion, whatever it may be. Use the text line. That's the way to go. Let's get off here. Did you hear there's some smoke in New York City and D.C. or something? It's funny, and I used to be kind of part of that media realm, I guess, if you want to call it that. Everything between Boston and Washington, D.C. But it's funny watching this play out on cable news because it's right there in their backyard. It reminds me of the media coverage back when there was that earthquake. You remember the earthquake that is like kind of mid Virginia, somewhere there, and we were just obsessed with it. So wildfire smoke in Canada. The thing I'm watching here, I guess we're going to blame it on climate change or global warming and not the ineptitude of the Canadian government to put out their own fires. So they're having to import fire crews from around the globe to come in and extinguish this. I guess it's Nova Scotia. But in the meantime, it's given the global warming alarmists a chance to go, climate change! And we must pass the Green New Deal immediately. And you must eat bugs and soy-based meat. Do you hear they're trying to put to death a bunch of cows in Ireland to meet global warming mandates? Are these people insane? Any of you believe that that's the way to go here? The Irish have a lot of problems with famine. If you go look back at their past, and this is what they want to do. So disappointing to see that. Rest in peace, Pat Robertson. Yeah, I remember the 700 Club. Also a player of the presidential politics. But a guy who kind of, there was that marriage of social conservatism and the mainstream conservative ink. It was really what, you look back at the Pat Robertson and his rise, but really think about how Republicans kind of married the traditional conservative values. When I say that, you know, smaller government, the more libertarian viewpoint, say on monetary policy, on government spending. When I say libertarian, absent the defense spending, because we're in the middle of the Cold War, so you wanted your guns and butter but she wanted to espouse a smaller role in government domestically. But they married that to social conservatism, the social issues, the traditional values, and built that coalition. And, I mean, the 1980s were dominated by Republican politics. And how that came out of, Nixon and Watergate, and we really turned a corner there with Reagan. But you got to think about that era of televangelism, and a lot of that had a lot to do with that era. And it continued through the 90s, and I think the Republicans probably jumped the shark a little bit when they went after Clinton the way they did. Instead of getting a scalp, they sort of mainstream normalized that behavior just because by giving it so much attention. But Pat Robertson dead at age 93. Played a big role. I mean, he had not so much anymore. He kind of got weird in his older age and coming out against Trump. But prior to that, I mean, and he said some goofy things. He probably hung on just a little too long. But when he was in his prime, guys, that was a big part of American politics. We're still fighting the Space Command fight. So yesterday, Washington D.C., both our U.S. senators, Katie Britt, Tommy Tuberville, Dell Strong, met with the commander of Space Command, General Dickinson, I believe is his name. New player, Ohio, trying to come in and bottom feed and get the Space Command headquarters. But they met, those two senators and the congressman met with Dickinson, and he says that he is sticking with Huntsville, and that Huntsville is his choice. Funny, though, the Colorado Republican Party, who Colorado is the kind of the foil here, trying to keep it there, and they're trying to keep it. This where the Space Command headquarters is temporarily placed, trying to make it permanent. The Colorado Republican Party said, no, we don't want it if you're going to make abortion. If you're going to make abortion, elective abortion, the access, the price. So they're trying to tie it to that. Those of you keeping track of that, I mean, doesn't it feel just eerily similar to the tanker contract about 12, 13 years ago? And Air EADS wins the first round and then loses the next four. I tell you, watch this real close, because I think the longer that this goes, and it has a way to go, but if you could keep it going at least for another a couple of years, and I think that's possible, and then you solidify it with the next president and hope that it's a Republican president. It's not a bad bet to bet against Joe Biden. But that would be my strategy. Because if they try to finalize it, you're liable to get something that's not Alabama. And the Biden administration has all kinds of different reasons not to give this to Alabama. They have all kinds of, you know, they could say abortion. They could say Tommy Tuberville's hold of flag officers. They could say transgender bathrooms. They could go up and down the list. And they're all kind of very specious arguments against it. But they're going to be able to do it because they won the election. So if I'm I'm playing this. Obviously, you want to exhaust all possibilities. But if, when it starts looking like Colorado, if there's any formal announcement, didn't you just roll out the challenges? Then you wait for the next presidential term and hope that Trump or DeSantis or whoever it may be looks Alabama's way. Speaking of presidential politics, yesterday was Mike Pence, who seems to be kind of a curious strategy here. And I want to see how this works out for him. But it could work. Could running against Trump. So I guess if you're a low information play here, you could still associate him with the Trump era, but not, but without all the baggage. But he's in his town halls last night, and this seems to be his brand. And he voted on January 6th. Or he went ahead and did the initiated the process for the transfer of power from Trump to Biden on January 6th, and he quote unquote kept his oath to defend and uphold the Constitution. That's what he's doing. That's what he's making his play here. It's going to be that. So it's kind of running against Trump. I mean, they're all running against Trump, technically, but is anybody really running against what Trump had done during his 4 years? Is anybody doing anything different? Oh, I wouldn't secure the border. I wouldn't nominate those judges. I wouldn't cut taxes. I wouldn't try to end the regulatory state. I wouldn't do any of that. Is anybody running against that? I mean, maybe like an Asa Hutchinson. I don't know why a guy like that is running. Somebody will explain that to me. 251-343-0106. But it's fascinating to watch. And then there's Chris Christie, who's just like, I predicted, and I'm telling you, this is all he is. The only reason he is playing a role in this campaign and running is he is just going to swing away at Donald Trump. He is the enforcer. He is the muscle here. He has no chance of being president. So he's just going to start swinging away and hopefully try to bait Trump into some kind of role in the mud. And then everybody else can go above it. And then those of you, I know there's a bunch of you out there on indictment watch. Trump World's telling people, telling their allies in the media that there could be an indictment as early as today coming out of this this special counsel probe paneled by Merrick Garland. That'll be a bombshell. Does it hurt Trump? I don't know. Does it help Trump? Do his numbers go up? That remains to be seen, but they're bracing for this. We kind of got a hint of it last week on True Social from Trump. But this sounds just so shamelessly political. But watch for that. Could be as early as today. 251-343-0106, the Ascension Technologies text line. I got to get a break in here. I'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5. Tell me to stay away from the train line. She said that all the railroad men just drink up your blood like wine. Hey, I was country. Back to the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5. 24 minutes after the hour on this Thursday morning, Ascension Technologies text line 251-343-0106. 1-800-919-0106. Carson Barry Moore in the next segment, so you'll want to stick around for that. Let's go to the text line. We're already pretty busy this morning. Paul writes, so it will be interesting if they can do to DeSantis what they are doing to Trump. They will try, but there's the law of diminishing returns. Now, I know I've been saying this for a while, but I mean, just at face value, you compare it to Trump and DeSantis. I mean, how much can we go off the dial here? Unnamed texter, Pence will get the Roy Moore vote in Alabama. He will do well in a lot of states. I suppose he'll do well, but what do you define as well? Because I think Trump is such a force, such a phenomenon, that Alabama won't go as it traditionally has in these competitive presidential primaries, because you know the last two real two competitive ones, not counting 2016, that was a runaway for Trump. I mean, obviously 2020 we didn't have one because we had a nominee, or we had the incumbent. But you look at 12 and you look at 2008. Yeah, Rick Santorum in 2012. And, you know, Mitt Romney was the ultimate nominee. And in 2008, you had Mike Huckabee. Those were the social conservative candidates. I guess Pence would be in that lane, but the problem for Pence is the shadow of Trump is just very, very overwhelming in Alabama. Jeff from Spanish Fort. Morning, Jeff. Following the science yesterday, Gupta was telling people to use the N95 mask. That cloth mask don't work against smoke particles. Funny that they are way larger than COVID. Imagine that. It is contradictory, but you're supposed to be too dumb to know that. Leo, call Pence by his name, Judas. I don't think so. I don't like making those biblical parallels, Leo. I don't think that's a smart thing to do. Looks like Ricky's back at it. Ron Paul and Rand Paul will be the best chance to save America. Pat Robertson was a false teacher and a Zionist. Okay, enough of that. Toothless Bammer. I listened to Michael Brown, former FEMA guy under W. He says Denver has gone unbelievably radical trying to appease expensive and like a California starter kit. I don't know, Denver is, I haven't been to Denver probably about 5 or 6 years. I guess it's been longer than that. It's been 7 years. But I don't know. It didn't seem, maybe it's just since I've been there. Buck writes, I bet those Mike Pence town halls and rallies are about as exciting as watching Kay Ivey sleep. Pete. Sorry, we have a little bit of a situation there. Pete writes, Pitt's folded to the Democrat ruse and hid behind the Constitution. Pitt is just a slow, dignified descent into socialism. Unnamed texter, they are doing to Trump what they did to Ted Stevens, just trying a bogus case to affect the election. It doesn't matter if he gets found not guilty. Tim, Jeff, don't see any reason for these people running for president other than trying to build their brand. Mike Pence is trying to sell more books. Never saw that they saw in him. That from Tim. And one last unnamed texter. I voted for Judge Moore. I would never vote for Pence. So tracking that, we will, I don't know. You guys have a very visceral reaction to Mike Pence, Vice President Pence.
It's where I found Jesus, where I wrecked my first call.
251-343-0106. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
I learned the path to heaven. Just full of sinners and believers. Learned that happiness on earth ain't just for high achievers.
I've come to know.
Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Thursday morning. 251-343-0106. There's some breaking news here just over the break. The Supreme Court ruling in favor of a challenge to Alabama's congressional maps, telling the legislature they're going to have to redraw. This is a pretty significant development. So we'll follow it along as much as possible. In the meantime, joining us now on the line from the 2nd Congressional District, our good friend Barry Moore. Congressman, good morning. How are you?
Hey, good morning, Jeff. How are you, sir?
Doing well. Well, I assume you heard the news. It just happened. But any reaction to the high court ruling there?
No, not really. I guess we'll have to just, I think we probably have to offer some maps and see what they say. But, I hadn't heard that, Jeff. That's news to us, too. So it's kind of breaking here for us on the front. So I'm sure we'll have to see what the Attorney General and then the state legislature wants to do, and we'll just move from there.
Yeah, well, it's a surprise. It's a bit of a surprise to me, but still, nonetheless. Well, let's kick it off here. Coming out of the debt ceiling, the vote, and, I can't tell if this is just media sensationalism or what's going on here. But it sounds like they're making out to be there's some turmoil within the Republican caucus. McCarthy's in trouble. You have a very good perspective on this. What is exactly going on?
Yeah, I think it's probably just a process. And, I mentioned to Kevin, I think about 70% of the Republican conference is new since Trump was elected in 2016. So the rubber stamp thing is kind of not a thing anymore. It's kind of like you're going to have, it's going to be a tight majority. There are a lot of populist candidates here. They're not here for political reasons in a sense. They're just running to try to bring conservative ideas to the Hill. And, and I think in a lot of ways, that's been good for Kevin because it was a tight speaker vote and he's been going to the right more so. And that's good for Alabama and a red state like us. We'd like to see our speaker more conservative, obviously. Now he's from California, so he has New York Republicans too he has to deal with. And so, I think that it's not, I think you'll see this thing work itself out. And I think that Kevin will continue to do well. He just has to, negotiate more so than probably a lot of speakers. I think Pelosi ruled with an iron fist. I think Kevin's trying to bring everybody to the table and that's better for the country.
Yeah. Well, my takeaway with the McCarthy era, Congressman is, it was seemingly very tough. There are some real divisions within the Republican caucus, but for thus far, he's done about as good of a job as one might expect. I don't think you don't have a big majority, so you don't have much room for error or anything. But so far, he's really, really had some wins, I think, over the Biden administration.
Yeah. I would agree, Jeff. I think his polling numbers indicate that. He's polling higher than any speaker in recent history. And again, I think it's because he has to have everybody at the table. And I think, I voted for Kevin to be speaker and I stood with him in that process because I felt like we couldn't get a House Freedom Caucus speaker. That wasn't going to happen. I'm conservative, but we know that wasn't logical. The votes wouldn't be there for that. We didn't want a really, really moderate liberal to the left speaker. So we wouldn't investigate January 6th or at least the abuses of the FBI and, the things that were going on with the DOJ and all that stuff. So we needed a speaker that would allow us to move forward on those issues. And so I think Kevin was best equipped to pull everybody together and honestly had a vested interest in making sure that we had conservative ideas brought to the table and had good, we had some good committee chairmen that were conservative. And so like Jim Jordan Judiciary. And so I think in a lot of ways I was against him on the debt ceiling because that's just where I was on the boat. I felt like that was best for the country or at least this last debt vote. I think it in a way it's tough. Sometimes you have to vote your convictions. That's what I try to do. But Kevin is forced, I think, with these tight majorities, like you said, to negotiate with those of us who are conservative on debt and issues like that. But at the same time, I think he's the best guy to bring the conference together and probably the most logical choice as far as moving the Republicans through this process with tight majorities.
Congressman, speaking of the, I guess the big news post debt ceiling, at least there seems to be a lot of interest in it. But some of the oversight things going on, obviously with Commerce Committee. But you're on Judiciary, you have some keen insight into this as well. I think that's where maybe, and we talk about McCarthy's poll numbers being kind of high. I think he's getting a lot. out of what's going on here, but you kind of give us a rundown of, at least from the Judiciary Committee side, of what's going on and some of these accountability things you have going on with the Biden administration.
Yeah, so, you know, I think Mayorkas, Secretary, the Department of Homeland Security, where we're looking at the border, I mean, I think we've brought a lot of attention to that. I think that's one of the things that more so the Judiciary has done a job early on with some hearings there. Obviously, we're addressing the FISA warrants, the FBI, and how they use those FISA warrants to spy on the Trump campaign. And in some ways, with the reports from Durham, how they, you know, in some ways they protected Hillary, but they prosecuted Trump. And so as we begin to bring this stuff to light, it's important for us in Judiciary, and Jim Jordan's doing a good job as chairman, too, is to, we have an old saying, get the hay down where the goats can get it. And I think Jim does a good job of that. But to connect the dots as well for the American people so they can see that, actually, it was a Kremlin that provided information to Danchenko, who provided information to Steele for the dossier that was paid for by the Democrats through the Clinton campaign. And so as we begin to show, and I think bring light, that the American people have a reason to be suspect of some of these government agencies that have been weaponized against them, and also with the IRS, and so have they been weaponized against the American people. So our job is that we have some responsibility to bring light to these things, to shed light on them, and then, of course, work in conjunction with the oversight to make sure that this abuse, this weaponization of the federal government coming after conservatives and certain political candidates needs to halt. And we're going to shed light on it and have the American people join us in the fight, I hope.
Yeah, so you kind of build off of it. But, you know, looking at, we got a presidential cycle really, really starting to heat up. But that's got to be a big part of what they talk about on the campaign trail, right? Just getting some kind of accountability into these agencies, the so-called deep state or administrative state, and it's really important for you guys to lay the foundation.
Yeah, I think so, Jeff, and I think that's going to be the test of McCarthy's leadership. It's not to this point, not even get elected speaker, but how do we work through the appropriations process to de-weaponize this woke, wasteful spending that's going on? And I think that through the approach process is where that begins. And I'm encouraged. I had a hearing in Ag Committee this week, and I heard one of the chairman or one of the secretaries say, well, you know, we had $365 million in the budget last year, I think he said. And he said they're wanting a $411 million, and the approach is coming out at $340. So they're actually cutting spending in some of these areas. And this particular secretary is not weaponized. He's not one of those agencies. But it's encouraging to me to see that the leaders – on these committees that are in charge of appropriations that are ran by Republicans, because we're in the majority, are starting to tighten the purse strings. But in some ways, where it's weaponized, we absolutely need to zero that out.
Well, let's talk about, you mentioned Mayorkas. That was one of the things a lot of people talked about, that he would be certainly under the scrutiny of a Republican-led Congress, and even the discussion of impeachment has been circulating. I mean, well, what do you do there? The border is clearly out of control, and the administration will just continue to insist everything is fine, which is not the case at all. But there's only so much you guys can do on the legislative side, and you mentioned the purse strings and whatnot, but you got to start with Mayorkas, right?
Yeah, I think he's an obvious he's violated that oath that he took to protect the American people and the oath of office. And, I think in some ways he would be a good target to look into. And certainly I think impeachment, it has to be on the table with him, because there's only so much we can do if he just keeps abusing. And he just turns a blind eye to the laws that are already on the books. He interprets them in a way that allows him to just allow people to pour in across the southern border. And then he looks at us straight face and says, we have operational control, and we just know that not to be the truth. And so, hey, I think in some ways, one of the members mentioned it yesterday. I think it was Troy Nelson, Texas, said that he lied to him in a committee hearing a few months ago. And so I think there's an opportunity there, and Mayorkas has to be one of those people we look at impeaching. And, you know, then we go from there. I'm on the articles to impeach him, and of course, Christopher Wray as well at the FBI. I think there's some things we have to do to start holding this administration accountable, these secretaries, these directors that are not doing their job, because the American people expect that from us, and that's what we got to do.
The Christopher Wray story is really bizarre to me, and I know he's engaged in a kind of a war with House Oversight and Chairman Comer, but they really are just kind of thumbing their nose at the Republican Congress at the FBI, aren't they?
Yeah, and I think that's why you're going to see them hold them in contempt. I think Brett Comer mentioned that this morning, and I think at some point they – in a lot of ways, it's our job that we're to oversee these agencies. And that's, again, we have the funding control, the purse strings, and the ability to impeach. And so I think it's incumbent upon us to do those, to do the tough things. I mean, the American people, Jeff, when I was touring just the district, and I know it's probably not just the second congressional district, but all over the country, this weaponization of government coming after groups that are conservative, coming after political people who, you know, like President Trump, how they've gone after him and never took their foot off the gas. And at the same time, they're turning a blind eye, deaf ear to the things of the Hunter Biden laptop or Hillary Clinton and the hard drives and the cell phones that they destroyed with hammers when they were under subpoena. That just tells you that the government is no longer working for the people in those agencies. They're abusing that power to try to control politics. And that's not their, they're supposed to work for us, and they're actually supposed to be looking and spying on other governments, not the American people. And so I think that we've got some areas that we can actually, like I said, we have some recourse, and I think we need to execute.
Joined by Congressman Barry Moore here on the program. Real quick, we'll get to some of these, but House Freedom Caucus, there's being some made about a division there, but I it's hard for me to read what's going on here. Everything going okay with the Freedom Caucus?
You know, I think so. Again, we're all liberty loving Americans over there, and it's tough sometimes to say, hey, you know, we're going to agree 100% on every issue. But I think as a group, we are certainly working to pull the speaker to the right, the conference to the right, the country back to from this fiscal cliff. And you know, that makes for some tough votes sometimes, Jeff, but we got to do what we think was right for the country. And I think it's interesting when the House Freedom Caucus, those are some solid liberty loving Americans, and they see some, you know, some issues with the direction of the country, and they're willing to fight. And for them, it's not they don't stick their finger in the air and go, hey, which way is the wind blowing? These guys are men of conviction and women of conviction, and they're going to stand for what they believe in. And that's not going to say that we're going to agree 100%. We didn't even know our founding fathers didn't always agree on issues and how to structure government. But at the same time, we're at the table, we're in the fight, and I think at the end of the day, the country's better for it.
Congressman, another big thing, and the media are very dismissive of those who are warning about this, but I think it's a legitimate concern. But what some in power would do with gas stoves and put in place some kind of ban or try to wind down homes with gas stoves. But it's not just this isn't just some kind of phony baloney thing that the right could try for, you know, for the sake of getting people scared. There are some real activists, I would say, out there. They'll look at doing something like that as a measure to curb so-called anthropogenic climate change.
Yeah, we started as conservatives bringing attention to this in January, and MSNBC, Time, the New York Times, the Hill, Associated Press all said we were fear mongering. You know, we're not coming after your gas stoves. The fact checkers were even taking a stand saying, oh, they would never do that. And then in May, New York announces, hey, they're going to become the first state to ban gas stoves. And so we've got a couple of bills this week on the floor and next week that we'll be trying to get out of here to say, keep your hands off the gas stoves. But again, it's more about control with this crowd, man. It's just staggering to me. I mentioned to it yesterday to somebody. I said, you know, here's the party that says a sixth grader can determine whether they want to be a male or a female and chop off body parts and take hormone blockers. But you as a human adults, we can't decide what we want to cook our food on. And so it's just insane that now they're saying all this new construction can't have gas stoves in it. And so, you know, like I know, man, the restaurant industry in New York and everywhere else is still recovering from COVID. And now they're trying to go out and tell these commercial kitchens, you got to go all electric and you can't use gas. But man, it just doesn't make any sense. So I hate to put the thumb on the scale, from the federal standpoint, but sometimes the ridiculousness of the left in these states that are running these governments, we have to get involved. And that's something we're going to have to do is say, you're not going to touch the gas stoves, and we're going to put some guardrails and guardrails on this thing so that we're not funding this, again, this environmental overreach with the left.
Well, I guess you would just kind of pass something at the federal level that says these kinds of bans aren't allowed.
Yeah, it just holds the Department of Energy, keeps them from regulating them. That's an agency that the administration would use, obviously, to come after these. So we're just going to make sure that we put the guardrails in place so they don't start overstep. Like they will just make sure they don't continue to overstep bounds like they've been so famous for in the past.
I'm not really an economist on this, but it doesn't seem that electric is cost effective, especially in a big commercial kitchen, right? That gas is much less cost prohibitive.
Yeah, it's efficient, and not only that, it's for the quality of the food and the temperature controls. If you talk to the chefs, the people who do this for a living, I mean, my wife and most of the people who do a lot of cooking love gas. They don't. The electric thing, and then for the poor families where they go, hey, you got to rip out all of your gas lines and you got to install, whatever it is, 240 energy. I mean, most of these stoves don't run off 110. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so, it's like they're going to have to come in and retool their kitchens, put electric in there and try to put in the breakers to pull the energy to run the stoves. It's just insane, especially for poor families who just they don't have the resources. And again, it seems like to me the left and the Democrats sometimes just, they miss the obvious, you know?
It's just like electric cars and the expensive batteries. Congressman, we got to leave it there, but you're very kind and generous with your time. Best of luck to you. Hopefully we can hear from you again soon.
Hey, thank you, Jeff. I appreciate your time, man.
Thank you. Congressman Barry Moore there. We got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
I can't get to sleep at night. The parking lot's so loud and bright. The AC hasn't worked in 20 years. Probably never made a single person cold. But I can't say the same for me. I've done it many times. Somebody take
Welcome back to the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Thursday morning, 251-343-0106. Back to our breaking news for our last guest. The 5-4 decision here. The Supreme Court said, guess what? You got to do it all over again, Alabama. It'll be interesting to see how this will look. But what the court has said, and it contradicts the law, an interpretation of the law, but that the state has to draw a second predominantly African-American district. So what's that going to mean? Well, guys, I think it means 7 Republican members of the of Congress from Alabama, but we'll see how that plays out. We'll see what kind of backbone the elites in this state have if they're willing to do that. But if they start slicing and dicing Terry Sewell's 7th Congressional District and start diluting it, and you create 2 districts, and you look at the map, I mean, you're going to have a southern district, and this is the way it's going to go from Mobile to Dothan, and that's going to set up a Barry Moore-Jerry Carl showdown, and then you're going to have that oddball district that's going to split the African-American vote in the state. It's going to be really, really, really gerrymandered. But you're gonna dilute the African American vote, and you're gonna have to have very, very high turnout from Democrats. Our Republicans are gonna take all 7 seats. They're insane. And Terry Sewell is just as much to blame here for not coming out and speaking out against this when she was talking. When they do this, when they initially draw these maps, guys, the way this works is the legislature will they'll ask the delegation to draw a map. And typically what happens is they give Terry Sewell first pick, and then the other six members kind of divide it among themselves. And she has stayed quiet this whole time. It's going to cost her congressional district. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Living on the road, my friend, was gonna keep you free and clean.
From Buck's Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between, an insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Allen versus Milligan, a Supreme Court decision just handed down, really going to impact Alabama. Either Alabama is going to have to redraw its map. So guess what? Special session. Yeah, special session coming probably, I don't know. They got to move fast here, and I warned about this, but to get ready for the 2024 election, the primary, we have an early primary. They got to move fast and get these things okayed and get the ballots ready. And the party's got to start qualifying candidates here later this year. So this is not one to sleep on. But if you haven't heard, Alabama, the legislature, I guess, lost a 5-4 decision. Justice Roberts and Justice Kavanaugh sided with the liberals on the court and ruled that Alabama's congressional districts that have been to congressional districts for like the last 30 years are unconstitutional, that we need a second African-American district. The problem, guys, yeah, there are enough. The black vote in Alabama probably does justify or warrant, if you just look at the numbers, two districts. But the problem is they're not geographically contiguous. So you have pockets all scattered throughout the state. I mean, obviously the black belt, and the big cities, you can draw those. But, I mean, Huntsville, the north part of the state, or parts of the Wiregrass. You look at, the very far eastern part of the Black Belt, Macon County, Russell County, Bullock, Barber County, where there is a minority vote. But in between, you dilute that. So they are going to draw, and it's going to be tight. I mean, it's going to be like 50.1% to get two majority African-American districts. I think that just sets up Republicans for seven congressional districts, if the Republicans want it. Now, sometimes you'll see Republicans do this in cases that they can win the seat. And they do this all the time in the judicial races, or they won't contest one or two seats, especially Mobile County. But that's what's going to happen. You're going to have what they call retrogression, I think. Especially if you have a big Republican cycle. I mean, I think it's really, really, really a dangerous game Democrats are playing here. Because there's no Democratic Party infrastructure whatsoever in Alabama to protect the turf of these two congressional districts. Joe Reed could care less. Joe Reed is in it for Joe Reed. He is not trying to expand the map for Democrats in Alabama. So they want it. They got it. So get ready for that. It's gonna be interesting to watch. Well, there'll be plenty to talk about. I'm gonna try to find some people to come on and kind of explain it for us. But just a bombshell of a decision. I would have thought it went the other way, 5-4, but I was wrong. I guess the surprise was Kavanaugh going along with the liberals on this one. it just seemed that 11th Circuit decision earlier. Because the way this happens, guys, if you remember, they did the special session. And then, because the census data came in late, because of COVID, so they had to rush to get everything together. And you had all kinds of problems with our elections last cycle because of it. You had a lot of counties, their boards of registrars that just weren't equipped to run a hurry-up offense and get the ballots right, number one. Number two, I think this map at the legislatures is just probably vulnerable now as well. Yeah, the guys in the legislature, our good buddy Jim McClendon and Chris Pringle, I don't know if he's my buddy anymore, but we'll call him that. I thought they were doing about as good a job as you could do. My only gripe was it was a little too secretive. We had to be secretive to avoid litigation. Well, you were going to be sued anyway, so make the process open. But here we are, and the politics are going to be very, very fascinating. But I think Terry Sewell's going to lose her seat. We'll see. She's got a war chest. Maybe she can make it competitive, but that dilutes her district. She gets her vote. She gets her strength out of Selma and Birmingham. She got to somehow keep those two together, I would think. Her hometown of Selma and then where she resides now. Ross Bridge or somewhere in Birmingham. 251-343-0106. Coming up in about a half hour, State Representative Mark Shirey. And then in the 11 o'clock hour, Congressman Robert Adderholt from the 4th Congressional District. So you want to stick around for that. Unnamed texter, Jeff, I haven't heard you mention anything about Tucker on Twitter. I missed that. I'm very curious in your perspective. That's from Lauren. I did watch the first one. It's going to get big time views. Tucker can't do his hour show anymore. No one's going to sit around for that. But I thought it'd be like a Joe Rogan style thing. But no, what he's doing is something that hasn't been tried before. Can they monetize it? If they really got 100 million views, would you pay for $1 an episode for Tucker? Well, let's just say only 10% of the people that watched, would they pay $1 an episode? Maybe. 50 cents? I think you can monetize it somehow. But I'm telling you, I worked for Tucker for 3 years. If you haven't heard, I know I bring it up a lot. But those monologues are exactly like our editorial meetings. We used to do a 10 o'clock editorial meeting every weekday. And we had a conference room at the Daily Caller when I was there. And he would give the same sort of talk. There was just a little more profanity, but it was always just kind of fascinating. And he evolved. You guys may remember him from Crossfire to CNN days, and his journey from there to MSNBC, and then finally Fox News, and then the thing about Tucker been fired from all three now. But he hasn't always been this rabble-rousing populist. I mean, he was establishment Republican for a while. He was neocon. He wrote for the Weekly Standard back in the day, the now defunct Bill Kristol Weekly Standard. But I think it's an evolution, not out of like a personal or a opportunistic thing, but a real evolution of figuring out how the world works. We all do that. Ben says, sounds like they really wanted to talk to you about your car's extended warranty. Well, so And so technology, they kept getting phone calls. That was Congressman Moore trying to call in, and it was somehow, I don't know how I have this set up, but that's what you heard there, Ben, in the last hour. Buddy writes, we as Republicans need to be looking for the best candidate that can beat the Democratic nominee. As much as I like Trump, I don't think he can do it. He won't get any more votes than he did the last election. DeSantis seems to be the best choice to me. He will pull the Republican vote, plus he will get the votes of those on the other side who are sick and tired of the way Democrats are running things. Well, buddy, maybe you're right. I'm just going to handicap this. I'm not trying to pick a side or anything. But the question is, what has Donald Trump done to grow his vote total for 2016? This is very important. What has he done? Is it it's a game of addition or subtraction? Would you say Trump has played the addition game or the subtraction game? I know some of you are like, the hell with them, they're traitors, they don't matter. The true patriots stick with Trump through thick and thin. But even Mike Pence, his vice president, is not going to vote for him. How many people has Trump lost along the way? Do we all kind of reunite at the end of the rainbow? That's not the best, using a rainbow these days. But to get the pot of gold and win the presidential election in 2024. Unnamed texter, Stove Man, how about just getting rid of the Department of Energy? Another texter here, another paradox. Gerrymandering is bad unless it is good. Yeah. Well, they're going to have to gerrymander the hell out of these maps to get what they want, what the court wants. They're going to draw districts that look like an octopus. I am telling you, they got to do it that way. There's going to be some very strangely drawn districts. But get ready, guys. You're going to have a situation where if you want to drive from one end of the first congressional district to the other end, you're probably going to have to go through Florida to get there. Yeah, if you're driving from Mobile to Dothan, you don't go. A portion of your journey is through the state of the panhandle of Florida, by the way, just because of Interstate 10. But that's what I think is going to happen. We're going to have Mobile and Baldwin County. Well, they may not even be able to do that. They may have to split up Mobile County and pull the black vote and put that in a district. And Mobile will have two. Mobile could have two congressmen. Montgomery did it for a long time. Birmingham does it with Palmer and Sewell. The Shoals did it for a while. Decatur had to for a while. But Mobile City Limits may very well have two different congressional districts. At least it's going to be fascinating to watch how they do this. Nate Texter, so Chris Pringle wasted all of our time in the state's money making us look like morons. Good form, Chris. Good form. I'm not going to put this on Pro Tim Pringle here. I think they were given a good faith effort trying to follow the law. I said my only gripe is that they did it so secretively in the name of protecting the state from litigation, which guess what? We had litigation and they lost anyway. So they just made it an open process. That's always the best way to handle it. And you could have shown that you guys were making the best possible effort to follow the Voting Rights Act. And when you do it in secret, you're not only making open government guys upset, you also draw the suspicion of a lot of people. But that's another discussion for another day. I still maintain I don't think they wasted our time. I think they thought they were following the law. Let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Always late, living by the drop, in their news. Life in Dixie with these Alabama blues.
Cotton on the roadside, cotton in the ditch. We all picked the cotton, but we never got rich. Daddy was a veteran, a Southern Democrat. They ought to get a rich man to vote like that. Singing song, song of the South. Sweet potato pie, and I shut my mouth.
Welcome back to the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thank you for staying with us on this Thursday morning. 251-343-0106. Coming up in the next segment, a good buddy of the program. I got to see him last week when I was in Montgomery. State Representative Mark Shirey, Dr. Shirey, going to be with us. Also, 11 o'clock hour, Congressman Robert Adderholt. Ascension Technologies text line 251-343-0106. Use your texting device. Still trying to work my way through these texts here. Unnamed texter, Jeff, are you serious? Trump doesn't have to do anything to grow the vote total. Biden is doing that for him. Come on, man. I don't think so. I think people stay home. It's not like we have compulsory voting, unnamed texter. It's not like, well, I voted for Biden last time. I must go out and vote this time for Trump. It's going to be like this. Let's just stay home. I'm just going to stay home and just not going to go vote. I don't like either one of them. Trump has to. I repeat, he has to grow his vote total. That's just the reality of the situation. You may not, like I said, some of your loyalists are out there and you're very dismissive of the people who part ways with Donald Trump, but you are so misguided here. You need to try to win those people back over, because if you have an ugly, divided, circular firing squad of a Republican primary, people will just stay home. I'm not voting for that guy. You better hope that Trump can get over it in a hurry once he beats these guys, assuming he does, and I think he probably will, that he can go on some kind of mission to bring those Republicans back to his camp. That's got to be part of calculus. You may not like it. You may not like these people running against him. You may think they're traitors, but do you want to win? Or do you want to stand on some kind of moral high ground? Pete, if the goal is simply electing a Republican, we will sorely be disappointed again. That's how it always goes. Vince, Jeff, Trump had great policies, but his mouth is what ruined him. I believe he will say more stupid things in the coming months. And sadly, I hope it's bad enough to get him out of running and make way for DeSantis. Tim, Jeff, what do they do now? Get a map and say, draw me the way you want the districts to be, so you won't. So the 11th, that special panel drew a map for us. That's what's probably going to happen here. We're going to get 251-49 districts of racial gerrymandering, which the Voting Rights Act says you can't use race as a factor. But the way the courts are interpreting it is you can't use race as the factor, but it can't be a factor. So who knows? It's just whatever side of the bed some federal justices wake up on. The way this is being decided, it looks like. Unnamed texter, Jeff, how do you expect Donald Trump to increase his voting block if he continually fighting communist FBI, DOJ, and everybody else? He will increase his MAGA movement when the time comes. Well, I'm still concerned. I'll just say that. Steve, do you think Pence and his family really felt threatened from January 6th? I like Pence, but I'm not sure I believe that about the January 6th narrative. I don't know if it's necessarily a threat, but Trump preaches loyalty and sticking with him. And Pence played his part for the most part. Trump did not stick with Pence at all. It's pretty clear.
Hello, Kansas.
Now, he may have felt slighted at the end, but it was a very chaotic time at the end of Trump's term post-election. All right, we still got a bunch of texts to get to. We will get to those in a short order. 251-343-0106, the Ascension Technologies text line. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 1065.
Just to send it on down the line. This is for the one who drives the big rig.
The first thing I remember knowing was a lonesome whistle blowing and a youngin's dream of growing up to ride.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Thursday morning. Ascension Technologies text line 251-343-0106. We will get to your text just as soon as possible. Like I said, a very busy news day this morning with the Supreme Court ruling. 5-4 decision ruling that Alabama's going to have to draw new maps. So we'll see how that plays out. Joining us now, one of my favorite guests, he represents you guys in West Mobile, but he is calling from the State House today in Montgomery. State Representative Mark Shirey with us. Representative, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Jeff. I am doing well. Beautiful day in Montgomery, and odd that I'm actually in the State House since we've already sunny died, but I had some issues to take care of, so here I am.
I hope the ghosts of the 2023 session aren't in there haunting you, but I don't even know what that would look like. It's so quiet and nobody there.
The halls are empty. There are no lobbyists here wanting to talk to us, and all the staff here is looking at me really strange.
It's fascinating for me to watch, but like when you guys gavel out and you come down the hallway there. And it's like you're doing your own little tiger walk or something, you know, and they're all waiting to grab a moment with you. It's so fascinating to watch how that plays out. But you had your first go around. How do you feel about it?
Well, I mean, I think we've done a really good job for the people of Alabama this session. It's, you know, I've been in the State House here watching sessions for years, but this session, to me, went really smooth for one and really quick. I think the leadership did really good of picking bills that were, you know, not entirely controversial to keep the process moving good. And I think even the 31 new freshmen added to the process. So I'm pretty pleased.
Well, and I don't know how much you followed this, if you followed it as closely as I have over the years or anything, but you're right. I mean, let's compare to, historically speaking, compared to past sessions, the House in particular, the Senate's a different, totally different subject. But at first it seemed a little, I won't say contentious, but you got what you needed. The rules package had a lot of question marks for some of us, but that turned out to be a blessing for the House. And you generally had bipartisan agreement on a lot of things. I mean, I got to give it to the Speaker Ledbetter. I thought he ran a really, really tight ship and probably one of the better ships we've seen since the early days of that Hubbard era when it started.
Yeah, I think Speaker Ledbetter, Chairman Laverne, Chris Pringle, our pro temp, all those work together. I can remember maybe two sessions when we gaveled in late, and we gaveled in late by 2 minutes. So I understand
that was a problem. Yeah. 40 it used to go 45 minutes to an hour past what the schedule was when they would gavel in, and no real good reason why, but you just kind of sit there and wait for things to come to end. And that was not an issue this year at all.
It was not an issue. We were called by the pro temp 15 minutes before session, and I was in my seat, and I was ready to go, and we gaveled in right on time, and we got to work.
Yeah, and it's always fun to watch. I mean, it's like watching an anthill sometimes, trying to keep up with what's going on in the House chamber. But like one speed bump along the way, maybe a couple that I wasn't wholly aware of. But you didn't have it didn't seem like a very drama-filled session either.
Not much drama. We had our bumps, like you said. We had some incidents that kind of slowed us down a little bit, and some hurt feelings on both sides. But I think we've worked through those for the most part, and just working for the people of Alabama now. I just wish we could get all of the things that we passed in the House through the Senate.
Yeah, well, that's the complaint. They probably say the same about you guys upstairs. But let's look at. We'll start here. What do you think are the crowning achievements of 2023, if you had to pick a couple?
Oh, a couple. Historic tax cuts. I mean, we cut, $300 million in taxes? The largest tax cut in the state of Alabama. One of mine, I actually didn't sponsor any bills, but the first bill that I co-sponsored was the adoption bill, where we modernized and streamlined the adoption process. That was very personal to me, the first bill that I co-sponsored, and the reason is my wife is adopted. So that was a fairly emotional thing for me. So I'm really proud of that. I'm proud of our education budget, even our supplemental budget is going to be really good for education. I think we're going to move the needle on education, hopefully with the initiative that we put in place. And even the savings accounts that we put in place so that we can avoid proration at all costs. So we paid off some bills and didn't raise any taxes. So I'm pretty proud of those achievements.
Yeah, no, yeah. I mean, the books look pretty balanced. The books look really in good shape. Now, we keep hearing a seismic shift in the financial world that could impact us, and we could have some bad years in as for state coffers go, but it sounds like you're prepared for that so-called rainy day.
Yeah, we put some money back for that, and I was all for that. We can't expect the economy to keep going like it's going, and you know our coffers were full from all the federal spending, all the COVID dollars that came in, and that's going away. We all know that, so. Putting some money back for a rainy day is absolutely what I would prefer to do. And paying off debt.
Joined by State Representative Mark Shirey here on the program. Well, the next question would be achievements, but things that you would have liked to have seen come across, or at least have an opportunity to vote on, missed chances, missed opportunities. What are you looking at there?
We did have some missed opportunities. The ballot harvesting bill actually came out of my committee. That bill went to the Senate and went up to the Senate to die. We did not address gaming at all. I mean, there was rumors that we might have a bill or something like that, but that didn't come up at all. School choice. We missed on that one. We did some things for school choice, but we had another bill. I would love to just see that one debated. And we had some controversial bills, the drag shows and the What is a Woman bill that passed out of the Health Committee, wasn't brought up in the Senate. I can't believe that we're at the legislature having to define what a woman is or even having to say, hey, these sexually explicit shows shouldn't have kids in them. I mean, that's against my common sense, but I guess at some point we do have to draw the line somewhere.
Well, let me ask you, this is one I think Senator Gavan upstairs is really pushing, but looking at doing something with the state health officer, I mean, you're in this space and you understand it. What do you think about the way the state chooses a state health officer? Is there something that needs to be done there?
I absolutely believe there's something to be done there. Why a state association, a private association, is electing a state health officer, and that's not under the purview of the governor's office. I don't understand. And I don't understand why that bill didn't get more traction or why they tried to gut it in the Senate. It doesn't make sense to me. The only thing I think of is the state medical association has a very, very strong lobby. And that's sad to say.
Well, and talking to, you know, we talked to Chairman Lee and and Chairman Melson. I mean, they're very deferential to guys with the medical degree, the have the doctor in their title, and they just think this is something that should be only be handled by them. But I guess that's the question: is that something that ought to be done that way, or does the state government component to it kind of make a need where you need to have more, a broader range of expertise in that decision-making?
Well, if you think about the State Medical Association, MASA, I guess they do control healthcare, but they're not the only providers of healthcare. I'm an optometrist. We butt heads with MASA all the time over scope issues. There are pharmacists that have, issues, occupational therapists, chiropractors, all these other people provide health care in the state of Alabama. And they come up and complain that we don't have enough doctors. And then they want to allow the people that have the knowledge, have the education, have the training to provide medicine to the state. So it's a turf battle. I understand that, but no, I still don't believe that we should defer to MASA for everything. Now, doctors are extremely important. Absolutely. We'll do all we can. We haven't passed the bills to help get more doctors in the state with different residency programs and things like that. Absolutely. They should be a part, but they shouldn't exclude everybody else. I said that's sort of like Walmart selling Target or telling Target they can't sell shoes because they hadn't been through Walmart's shoe training process. It's just not the case.
Well,
I do think it should be changed.
Well, another friend in our program, he predates you by a term, but Jim McClendon, who used to be the Senate Health Committee chairman, he would always say this about the way, and it really, he's been a long critic long before COVID-19 or any of this. Alabama doesn't exactly have a really good track record when it comes to public health. So the system needs some kind of structural change that we can't be, like you said, as deferential to the status quo as some would like us to be. But do you look at that and say, yeah, that's a legitimate complaint that there are health issues and maybe at minimum there ought to be some structural changes?
Oh, absolutely. Look at our infant mortality rate. I guess we rank first in the nation in that, which is not a good place to be. I think that's in the purview of the state health officer. The one problem that I see here is we don't have mechanisms for oversight. We can't call people in. We don't have subpoena power. We can't have them come and testify in front of the House or the Senate. So I think that needs to be changed. And that's just not the health department. That's other departments also. We pass laws and rules and regulations here, and I've seen some of them just ignored. That's not right.
That is strange. Doc, we'll get you out of here on this, but, you got three more years left in this quadrennium. Obviously, I guess now we're kind of looking ahead. I mean, what would you like to see? I mean, we talked about regrets, so it's probably paralleled a lot of this, but what do you think is reasonable? Because I think with gambling, Speaker Ledbetter wanted to take that off the table because of all the new members. But now that you got this year and you're no longer new, you kind of know how this racket works. What do you think y'all are ready for or would like to do in 2024?
Well, I absolutely believe that gambling will come up. The gaming in the state of Alabama is broken. I talked to Senator Albritton, and I'm not one for going and gambling a lot of money. I work too hard for mine, but we already have gambling in the state of Alabama. It's just not regulated, so it's not taxed. So anything we can do and bring that money back in and put it into education. I mean, we did have a great budget this time, but we could always do more for education.
What would you say that? I mean, are we talking, do you think school choice? Because that would be really, really, well, just considering the lay of the land and yet the teachers unions, the school boards, a lot of different localities that have a lot of questions or very skeptical of a school choice system. I mean, is that reasonable to think that could be done next year? Or is it going to take a few years, you think?
I think it's going to be taking a few years. It'll definitely come back up. We had a good run with it this time. The Price Act, as it was called. Does it need tweaking? Maybe. I don't know, because it didn't come up. I really didn't get as much into the bill as I'd like. I'm all for school choice for the those savings accounts. I think that would be really good. We just got to watch and make sure that we don't ruin public education in the aftermath of that. But, you know, the more we can do to get our education numbers up, I am all for.
Well, tell me, do you hear this from your constituents?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. The Price Act was one of my most email thing and voicemails in my office, specifically addressing that bill by name.
Well, that is, I think, you know, it's hard because it varies from locality to locality, but I'm very curious to see how that's going to play out. Well, Representative, safe travels back home. I assume you're coming home soon. Hopefully you are, but we do appreciate you making time for us.
Absolutely. Anytime, Jeff. I sure appreciate being on your show.
Thank you. That was State Representative Mark Shirey here on the program. We got to get a break here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
And the British kept coming. There wasn't as many as there was a while ago. We fired once more and they began to run in. On down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico.
Hear Richard Best picking on that red guitar. So get around. Now gather around, chillin' be down. We're just getting down, chillin', get loud. Well, you can be loud, yeah, and be proud. And you can be proud, yeah, and
welcome back to the Jeff Moore Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Thursday morning. Coming up in the next hour, Congressman Robert Adderholt of the 4th Congressional District up in North Alabama. So you want to stick around for that. In the meantime, 251-343-0106. You need to get in touch with the program. That's what you do. You text me, and I will reply, be it whatever your feedback may be, a compliment, which are rare, but, well, no, they're not. I take that back. A complaint, which are sometimes plentiful, sometimes not, but we will handle them on an individual basis. So hit us up on that text line. If you just tuning in, the big news right now, the Supreme Court just rejected 5-4, no ruling, but they ruled in favor of those challenging Alabama's congressional maps. So what does that mean? Looking at a special session, probably they're going to have to act fast. They got to come up with some dates and redraw these congressional maps to suit the federal courts and interpret the Voting Rights Act in a completely different way. I believe the new chairman of a reapportionment in the Senate is Steve Livingston. And then you got downstairs our very own Chris Pringle. It's funny. We did one of our shows during session. Sean and I both did our show down at that reapportionment office in the State House earlier this year. So that place is about to get busy again. They're probably scheduling meetings as we speak. But it'll be fascinating to see what they do. Guys, I think the Democrats are making a terrible, terrible mistake challenging this. I don't think they intended to win here. I don't think they wanted to win here. What's going to happen is they're going to have to redraw the maps the way the federal courts want them to. But you're not going to be winnable for Democrats. There is no Democratic Party infrastructure in Alabama. Joe Reed is using it as a piggy bank to promote his personal causes. You got a puppet chairman. They are not focused on winning elections. And a congressional race can be expensive, especially if the parties go head-to-head. I mean, you're going to have one really expensive primary, I would think. What else? You're going to have a head-to-head incumbent. And all the signs are pointing to Jerry Carl and Barry Moore going head-to-head. And I think you're setting up for Mobile to potentially have the city of Mobile, or at least Mobile County, to have two members of Congress. But this has got to be done before the next election. That's just around the corner. Watch this close. That's the big story. We'll get to your text on the other side. Stick around. This is the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
And there's always a stage and a beautiful babe to squeeze my life. In my simple way, guess you could say I'm living in the big time.
From Buck's Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way. No.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Thursday morning. 251-343-0106. You want to be in touch with the program, hit me up on the text line. That's your best opportunity. Still to come on the program about a half hour from now. Robert Adderholt, congressman from the 4th Congressional District, so you want to stick around for that. Spent a lot of time on this morning, but it's important. Supreme Court decision said that the state of Alabama is going to go back to the drawing board, literally, and redraw maps for its congressional districts. And I dare I say this, guys, they're going to come for the legislative districts. It's a mess. The interpretation, which I thought was the right interpretation by the legislature, not to use race, is just thrown this into a tailspin. And I think everything, school board districts probably as well, everything the legislature has done regarding redistricting is in a tailspin right now. But it starts with the congressional districts. The 2024 elections, at least with the legislative and the school districts, they have some time. The next election is not till 2026, but who knows? Of course, we say, hey, yeah, you'll do those over too. But that's probably a much difficult sell. And that's one that will have to make its way through the courts, and so they will probably have to wait till the next go-around. But here we are. The Supreme Court told Alabama, 5-4 ruling, race is going to have to be a factor. Race is going to have to be a part of it. So it is what it is. Let's see what we got here. Let's go to the text line. Toothless. Toothless Bammer. Trump has succeeded in polarizing his 16 votes. He has lost his 2016 votes. Okay, now I see what you're saying. He has lost votes. I think he has. How does he get those back? All of you Trump loyalists out there, this is so important. You could call names. You could call DeSantis and Pence traitors, but you are Donald Trump needs them. He needs every vote he can muster because in 2016, he just barely won. He barely won Wisconsin. He barely won Michigan. And he barely won Pennsylvania. And that's what put him over the top. Can he win those back? You could say, well, Joe Biden's so bad he doesn't need those. No, he needs those votes. There's no margin for error here. You guys don't get that. The same could be said for the other guys. They need all the Trump. They really need you Trump guys to come out for them. But I'm operating on the assumption Trump's the likely nominee. I think DeSantis has a shot, and I think he's got a path. I think he has a good Iowa that catapults him into the tighter poll numbers nationally. I think Trump does well in New Hampshire. I think South Carolina is kind of a big battle there, but you have a lot of different variables involved. Dirt Digger writes this, we need to do away with the two-party system. vote your moral beliefs and convictions so politicians tell the people where to stand. Christian, Alabamian, American, that's my party. That's where I stand. You need the parties. It's just, otherwise we would have we don't have a parliamentary system like they have in Great Britain, in the United Kingdom, where they had 20 parties running. And then you have these power-sharing agreements. Because essentially, you don't want this to be kicked to Congress to decide who is going to be the president. I mean, we don't have popular vote, but this is the closest thing we got. We need, as Republicans or as Democrats, that's where you need to vote your moral beliefs and convictions. Because right now, there's not a lot of common ground. These are two very, very divergent viewpoints about how to run the world or how to run the country. Do you believe in the power of the collective, or do you believe in the rights and liberties of the individual? Where do you put your emphasis? Scooter writes, people will stay home and the Dems will win with more votes than registered voters, just like last time. It's called voter fraud. I think they made moves to really tamp down on that in these states. I don't think you may be right, but it's not going to be as easy as it was in 2020. They really won't have COVID, at least as it stands now. Who knows? But two, you did have a lot of Republican-controlled legislatures hammer down on the election security. Don writes, Pence, Scott versus Harris Newsom. You heard it here first on 106.5. I cannot see that. No. A wild pick, though, Don. A different Don from the other Don. Unnamed texter, when you get down to it, no matter how you slice the pie, the numbers are still going to come out roughly the same. I don't think they realize that black people in Alabama are mostly Republican and will vote as such. They haven't figured this out. I don't think that's true. But I think what they're going to do is dilute the Democrat vote in Alabama, and it is going to build a path for seven congressional districts going for seven Republicans. Terry Sewell did not get out in front of this. She's out there tweeting what a win this is. That's it. Her congressional career is over as it stands. She's going to have to go head-to-head with the Republican now. There's no give me. That is the problem for her. She's going to have to go out on the campaign trail, and it's going to be ugly because I tell you what, the thing about Terry Sewell, I've gotten to see her a few times. There's Terry Sewell that we see at the Alpha meetings and on TV, then there's the Terry Sewell that goes in front of her constituents. It's ugly. It's demagoguery. It's race baiting. That's going to get her in trouble. I think if you do 51-49, you draw a district as such, you're going to wind up with two competitive districts and a vulnerable Terry Sewell. Let's see, some argle bargle from Ricky. Dave, let's talk about Ukraine counteroffensive. Note it took North Vietnamese a long time after the Tet Offensive before final victory. I've always been skeptical of Ukraine's chances here. Not saying they should succumb to the Russian invaders. Not saying that at all. But it is hard for me to say that the United States is justified here, especially when it's pretty clear the our Western European allies aren't as engaged in this as we are. I mean, after World War II, everybody downsized their military. Well, probably not everybody, but certainly after the Cold War, after the Berlin Wall fell, it just relied on the United States to be the world's policeman, didn't spend as much on defense. And we saw that in the Balkans in the 90s, and we're seeing it now in Ukraine. So, Dave, I don't know what the long-term prognosis for Ukraine is. See, Dave also writes, Ukraine launches counteroffensive against Russia. This new phase of the war, which many see as crucial, is persuading the Western allies to renew their support, comes as Kiev grapples with the fallout from the destruction of a dam. Moving right along here, we got... Randy writes this. Who is going to benefit from redrawing the district maps? If a certain race benefits, isn't that racism? Right. So the legal question here was for the legislature when they drew these maps, Randy, was do we use race as a, communities of interest criteria? Do you want to draw these maps in such a way that keeps race together? And the law, the Voting Rights Act says, no, you cannot use race. The way the lower court interpreted it was, no, it can't be the determining factor, but it can be a factor. So the interpretation was wrong all along by members of the legislature. So they got to go back and do this and get these districts in place. So I don't think it – I think it hurts them. Look, 6 congressional districts, 1 Democrat, 6 Republican. And you could – there was no way the 6th congressional district – I mean, the 7th congressional district was ever going to go Republican. It was never contested. Well, now suddenly the numbers justify – a competitive race. As I told you, you typically in Alabama historically have low voter turnout in Democrat precincts, number one. Number two, you don't really have a well-funded infrastructure for Democrat candidates in Alabama. The Democratic Party in Alabama is got other things in mind. Can they go head-to-head? Can Joe Reed go head-to-head with John Wall and win? If I'm handicapping that, no. Tim, Jeff, I think the Dems are and the Swamp want Trump to agree and make a deal, drop out of the race for the charges to be dropped against him. Probably. That's what they're working toward. I don't dispute that, but are they going to get it? I don't think so. Don writes this, good morning, Jeff. Good morning, Don. I believe it's inevitable Trump is going to be indicted and may even go to jail. Who knows who's going to be the nominee if that happens? One thing nobody's talking about is the precedents that assist for future elections. I look for artificial intelligence to play a big role in future politics. If Democrats can create a story based on hearsay and present as something real, virtually nothing can stop us except us. I encourage everybody, when given the opportunity, to show up next year and vote. I don't know if he's going to jail either, but I do think he could be indicted as soon as today. Here's the question. What does an indictment do for Trump? Does it hurt him? Or does it embolden him? Does it embolden his supporters? Do his poll numbers go up from it? And we have another Ricky here. 251-343-0106. Cinch Technologies text line. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Mount Cheehaw is my Everest, and the Coosa is my now. Alabama's where I was born and raised, and I think I'll stay a while. We sing about sweet home and Dixieland delight. We tell stories about what goes on in Montgomery at midnight.
Welcome back to the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Thursday morning. 251-343-0106. Text line. That's how you get in touch with me, your show host, if you so choose. Do we have more text here? No, it looks like we're all free and clear. The news is this. 5-4 decision. Alabama got to go back to the drawing board and come up with new congressional districts. And what does this mean for us here in South Alabama? Well, there's some speculation. Most of the smart money is on one big southern congressional district. Would be parts of Mobile County, all of Baldwin, Escambia, Covington County. What was it? Sean calls it the Quail Belt or something. Geneva, Coffee, Dale, and into Houston County, one congressional district, stretching state line to state line. And then you would probably have another one to move south through the black, up maybe the African-American parts of Mobile, Pritchard, on up into the Black Belt, and maybe even into Birmingham or something of that nature, but that's what we're looking at. It'll be fascinating to see what the legislature does, how they handle this. And they have a new criteria they have to adhere to. Some other news. Donald Trump coming to Alabama sometime this summer. That announcement this morning from the Alabama Republican Party. It remains to be seen when and where, but August is typically the time or their summer meeting, so I would anticipate August. And I've been hearing Montgomery, but that subject changed. It's just not a big venue in Montgomery unless they did it at the Crampton Bowl. But I think Mobile's still a possibility again. Donald Trump 2.0, would you go? Also, some other stories I haven't gotten to yet I want to mention. Green Track, the CEO at Green Track was referred to by the Ethics Commission for prosecution to the district attorney. Green Track just did all kinds of trouble, and it's barely hanging on. But Bobby Singleton, the state senator from that area, wanted to carve out a special exception for Green Track to do historic horse racing, I guess, just to keep the doors open. It is just a ramshackle, dilapidated building in near Utah, Alabama, in Greene County. And at one time, I mean, there's a story to be written here. That was like one of the few places you could go to gamble. This is pre-casinos in Mississippi. And it really changed that community. But then when they built the Choctaws built Philadelphia, and then you had the casinos at the Gulf Coast, and then you had those, I guess, Tunica along the Mississippi River. The appeal for the Utah-Alabama-based Green Track just fell off. But they've hung on all these years. So the gambling, it's there. It is there, and it's a thing, but is it long for this world? Turmoil there, and they keep having problems with employees and whatnot. Let's see, unnamed texter. No, I won't go. Jerry. I won't go to the Trump rally. Jerry, I bet the cowards wish they had the blank to pass the ballot harvesting bill now that the courts have ruled. Well, and the reason, Jerry, they weren't afraid to pass it. They're just afraid of the Democrats. I keep telling y'all that. There's a story about that sometime that I need to spend some time on. Maybe tomorrow. Then finally, Don, hey, Jeff, how about the scenario? Donald Trump comes to the Alabama Town Hall on the deck of the newly painted, restored USS Alabama. RSVP, I'm in. Probably not going to happen. More on that later. Got to get a break here. Be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Cotton in the ditch. We all picked the cotton, but we never got rich.